Actually, you have rough travel in outside.
You're right.
You have nothing outside.
All right. Whole meeting order. Has everyone had a chance to look at the minutes from last month? Can we have a motion for approval? The second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Any public comments? Anybody have anything? So, my only comments, I'm gonna turn this over to Deanne to give us, or Leanne to,
That's okay.
Give us a little update on healthy people.
Okay. Our steering committee met last Thursday to narrow down our focus from our November and October meetings that we had with over 50 of our committee partners. And we're looking at focusing on mental wellness and nutrition and working on early intervention and education. So, we will be meeting throughout the summer, calling together some more community partners for some lengthy 4-hour meetings to really dive deeper into nutrition and mental wellness and figure out what our next steps are for objectives and goals moving forward.
So, we may be calling on some of you to help us out in some of those areas. And if you have interest or in any of them, just let us know. Presentations, environmental health update. Mark?
I'm pinch hitting for Mark today. Pinch hitting for Mark. My name is Brad, team lead with environmental. This is actually Mark's presentation, so hopefully I do it some justice. Let's see. Mark wanted to start with the aging contract for retail food license, just kind of a quick overview of what we do. Restaurant retails, hotels, public swimming pools, tourist rooming houses, which is becoming more and more important with the state, depending on how they go with licensing the individuals. Airbnbs are becoming a big thing. The state's yet to act on whether we're going to go after licensing every single Airbnb as it pops up, but that's one of the things he wanted to touch on. Campground, special event camps, bed and breakfast, rec ed camps, special events, which as everybody knows, has exploded in the past couple of years, especially downtown. Tons of events every weekend. There's something outside with music, food, beverages, at the very least, a beer cart and a hot dog vendor, things like that. Let's see, you said down, right? And one of the things, I'm not sure if Mark has mentioned in the past, but DHS, Department of Health Services, has now completely moved the food section to the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. That is complete. And that, for us, it's 851 active licenses right now. And I wanted to point out, along with me and Mark going back and forth on a lot of these, we still have 15 plus new food operations coming in the works. Things like Chick-fil-A opening February 21st. You know, for example, we've been there probably 6 times by now. If everybody has seen Kings and Convicts Brewery in Pleasant Prairie, it's 51,000 square feet, banquet hall, brewery, restaurants. And one thing, when we do those, it not only encompasses the food, but the catering end of it for private parties and things like that. So they may have 4 or 5 kitchens in each place. So the 851 is active, but it has been increasing lately. And then obviously downtown, Stella Hotel has been on the radar for a long time. Opening beginning of April is what they're telling us right now. So that's going to be at least 3 restaurants and a rooftop bar restaurant along with the hotel. So those are the kind of things that we have going on right now. And then the target area keeps exploding. Every minute there's something new coming in. And then also ongoing standardization and inspections. That's DATCP's like minimum requirements for each inspection. So what they're trying to do is make it the same every single time and across the whole state. So we try to be up to date on that, and that includes myself going out with each inspector and routinely checking on what they're checking, if that makes sense. So you don't get one inspection one operator gets one inspection, a different operator gets a different inspection. You want to try to standardize it, whether it's a fast food chain or mom and pop restaurant. Then he put city of ordinances on here, trash and debris, animal bites, nuisances would be whether it's dog feces outside are a lot of the nuisances we get, or too many animals in a home, kennel pet shops, noise, weights and measures, farmers markets, scrap salvage yards are coming up in spring, and then the city transfers a lot of things to us for indoor air quality from private citizens, and then as well as liquor licenses, they send over a check from us just to double check if we have any holds on anything. For example, animal bites in 2018, we had 184 bites, slight increase from 17. Quarantines and vets was 32, and we had no positives this year. And we did send in 47, or were part of sending in 47. Animals for testing. A lot of times they're submitted and we're CC'd on the copy, or we're telling people to send it in as part of safe harbor, things like that.
Maggie, is there any rabies around?
What animals are rabies? So it's interesting because when I was in school, they said basically like bats, possum, skunks, those are like the big ones, but now even on the human side, if the human gets bit by any one of them, they're not even putting them through the rabies protocols. So there's a huge kind of, I think, disconnect between human medicine and veterinary medicine, which I think is kind of inappropriate because, you know, of what we know about it. I mean, we see a lot of animal bites cases because we have to do the follow-up, the two, we have to do two exams on them following. Not sure about the quarantines at veterinarian offices, unless those are animals that are not up to date on rabies.
If they're not up to date, they're required to be quarantined at a vet's office. And the vast majority of ours are at Safe Harbor, is usually where the quarantine spot is. Just because typically they don't have an interaction with the vet, and that's the reason that we're ordering the quarantine.
I don't think there's been a domesticated animal rabies case I think the last known human rabies was
the girl.
I think that was a bat.
We do get a lot of bats. We get a lot of live bats that we end up euthanizing, and we send them into the state. And normally that's something where people see them in their house, and the dog catches them, things like that, and we'll submit those for testing. That's a lot of the 47. I don't have the breakdown with me, but we have a lot of, it's a lot of bats. That's usually
what it is. The issue with, if it's anything but bats, is you have to send it. So that, in our practice, is something that we try to avoid at all costs.
Sure.
Because just exposure to our own staff for having to submit something like that. It doesn't happen very often, but if it does, it's pretty sad. So, it's interesting because, again, like you said, most of the people that are coming in are even a scratch from a pet constitutes a bite. So I think feedback from pet owners is that a scratch is different than a bite, but I tell them, it's whatever one interprets it as. So yep. I think the city does a good job.
Yeah, and this community service officers work with us a lot on these. Weights and measures testing, we test 789 gas pumps, and when we say gas pumps, each gas pump facing you may have 2 or 3 meters in each one, so it's not necessarily the big bulk unit that you see. So some of them have 6 for each individual unit, but most of them have 2 because they mix into one. And then you'll see our tags on the big bulk dispenser at each station. 9 fuel trucks, that's for fuel oil that's delivered for heating. 330 retail scales, that's everything from the checkout line all the way back to the deli where they weigh everything for you. That does not include the, like, produce scale when you walk around and put your watermelon on there just to see how much it weighs. So that does not count because they're not charging you off of that. And package checking for state audits, what they do is, the most fun one is if you buy a 50-pound bag of dog food, did you actually get 50 pounds of dog food, or did they forget to tear the weight on that? So we end up opening a bunch of packages and dumping them into a container and weighing them for them. So they don't have us do that too much because they do so much at the packaging plant. But once in a while, they'll send us out on those. Everybody's favorite one, the Charter 26 trash and debris. This is Karen's favorite one. So we had 1,627 complaints either called in, emailed in, in-person visit in 2018, and that's, you know, we had, I think we had high 1,400s in 2017. From that standpoint, it's actually getting more and more frequent. The one note Mark put on here, so like that order would be a 24-hour order because it's out on the street, between the sidewalk and the street for City of Kenosha. That's a 24-hour cleanup. If it's in the yard or in the backyard, it'd be a 10-day order. And that's a more lengthy process. They post it on the door, you know, call the owners, things like that. One note I put on there, city emailing complaints and pictures, that one was from the city. They are currently enforcing the 5-cubic yard requirement for bulk pickups at the street. And what they're doing is they're showing up saying that's more than 5 yards. They take a picture, they'll take 5 yards and then take another picture and send it to us. So it's kind of streamlined from that standpoint. They're not calling things in, but it is just another source of complaints to get things taken care of. So that's actually from the city. And then they mentioned 5 cubic yards is about 30 bags or so.
Are you seeing a lot of these as like evictions?
Yep, and you're seeing them in repeat addresses a lot. For the same reason, you're seeing. We do have one gentleman who calls all the time, and drives around and sees things all the time.
It's not my husband, is it?
So, that's our friend. He calls in 800 or so a year.
Oh my gosh!
And
of the 600,
yeah, he's good for about 40 or 50% a year. Whether he looks for the big one, and normally it's an eviction, things like that. The other, but what he does not take into account is their garbage day might be the next day. Mm-hmm. So he sees it and it's like a static thing. It's like, that'll be gone the next day. So we check it, you know, usually the next morning for stuff like that. So, but the city ones are real time because they already picked it up and it's going to sit there. So the emailing has helped streamline it a little bit. So they're not calling, giving an address, and then we go take a picture. So we're ready to do it right when we get out there.
How long are they allowed to leave it?
In the front, 24 hours.
Okay.
And the city actually will have a little leeway on that. If you call the bulk pickup in and your garbage stays Thursday, they'll let you put it out Tuesday night. They're okay with that, as long as you have a call into the city. So if we'll check with the waste department to see if they've actually called the bulk pickup in, but. Department of Safety and Professional Services, he just made a note, 22 licenses for mobile home parks. Tattoo body piercing has actually gone up a little bit, 16 licenses, and that's in general due to the permanent makeup, cosmetics. We have to license as a tattoo establishment. And the code is actually opening up and being currently revised for body art to include things like permanent makeup, because right now they don't really separate it off. So they're opening it up to public comment for this year. Private on-site wastewater treatment systems is next. And that's becoming a more, it's by the numbers, it's becoming a little bit more robust, I guess. Septic and holding tanks, new state permits 51, replacement system 77, and then the bulk of the work right now is the maintenance program, 7,500 systems, and they're going to complete the final inventory. It's roughly going to be completed, I think, by summer 2017-18. There's going to be about 800 systems on the maintenance schedule. And basically what that means is you have to have your holding tank pumped every year, or a note that you're gonna get it pumped, or and there's a reason why, like if seasonal house, things like that. And a septic tank, I believe, is every three, has to have a service contract with the provider. So that's becoming a cataloged thing. Department of Natural Resources, this is our well sampling program. 167 current wells sampled, 35 surveys, which means we go through every single thing with the well, whether it's in the basement pump, all the way outside. Mark made a note on here for the new coliform rule. He wanted to indicate there's no boil water notice anymore if it's coliforms positive, but E. coli negative. So we would just take follow-up samples on those kind of systems. We used to have, if it was coliform indicating bacteria, we would automatically put their establishment on a boil water. The DNR and the feds, I believe, have changed that to what currently is no boil water for those. A bigger thing with the DNR is seasonal startups. They want a lot of paperwork prior to opening, and they want a lot of systems to be chlorinated and in advance of opening. And then they want paperwork signed off to the fact that they did it correctly. And we have to follow up on that. That's through us. And seasonal wells would be like Petrifying Springs, not that one, but they have a couple other seasonal wells that they shut off and power off for the season. And then when they start them up, we have to be there right away. Beach sampling. 7 local towns and villages, 22 beaches sampled. 250 sample results, and then those are the current levels. 235 is safe, caution for 235 to 1,000. 1,000 is closed. Just a quick example, we do Lake Shangri-La, 2, Rock Lake, Center Lake, Camp Lake, 2 at Silver Lake, 4 at Twin Lakes, 5 in Paddock Lake, 2 at Lake George, and Pleasant Prairie actually began bringing in 3 beaches also. We don't do the sampling, but they bring it to our lab for testing. So that 22 is pretty extensive on the inland side. Another one of Karen's favorite, the Radon Action Month. It was January, and we did a half-off coupon for radon kits, and as you can see, we did pretty well. 175 kits instead of 75 kits sold. And we used Facebook Boost. Kenosha News actually picked up on it. Joe sent it down there, so that did really well. And just general Facebook posts. And we're still sorting through how many kits we're going to have all told, because people are mailing in checks and they would like the $5 off. So we're going to have a higher total than that. But it seemed to work pretty well, and everybody was actually coming in person too. They did a lot of that. Yeah. And that's what Mark had.
How many staff do you have to do all this work?
We have five full-time sanitarians, including our pulse inspector, and 2 techs, myself and Mark. So that's 8 and a supervisor.
On the change of the law on the coliform, no boil water, does coliform not does it cause any health issues? Or?
That's the reason they changed it. Right. It's just an indicating bacteria.
Okay.
Doesn't actually cause any illness, is what they're telling us. So it pops up pretty regularly.
Yeah.
It could be a bad sample. It could be something with an error, things like that. So they're really changing it to E. coli, and that's the reason they did it.
With Brad being the standard to standardize all of the staff, that was a huge undertaking, and kudos to him for all the work that he's done with the whole transition into the standardization practices that are occurring in the health department. So, thanks, Brad.
Thank you. So, Lindsay.
I'm Lindsay Strar. I'm the program coordinator for the Kenosha Racing Lead Free Community Partnership Program, otherwise known as HUD. So today I just wanted to kind of give a little bit of a grant overview, and then I'm gonna try to touch on some of the work that we've done throughout the grant, so you can see actual examples of the work that we've done and provided throughout Kenosha County throughout this last grant. As of the last time that I came here, we have actually received the grant, the new grant. That grant term runs from April 2018 to April 2020. It was actually a 2017 grant before we got it up and started. It was a it's considered a 2017 grant. But when we physically got the signed copy saying we can move forward was April of 2018. And in that time frame of that grant term, we will have to complete 300 risk assessments, which is going into 300 homes between the Kenosha and Racine communities. We actually can go into Kenosha, Racine County now, whereas before we were only focusing on Racine City. We are allowed to go into Racine County as well now. We have to complete 220 completed units. That's us going into a home and identifying hazards and removing the hazards from the home that we can count as a completed unit. We have $3 million in lead funding, and we also have $300,000 in healthy homes funding. So we have a total of $3.3 million to spend within the terms of the grant year. We are currently on quarter four of the grant. So our this fourth quarter will end in March. We've completed about 73 of the risk assessments. So we're at 24% complete. We've completed 41 units, so we're at about 19% complete of the grant. We've already met our fourth quarter completed goals. We were only supposed to be at 35 by the end of March, and we're already at 41. And we've got multiple projects in place already, so we're exceeding our current completed unit goals as of right now. We have to be at 83 risk assessments completed by the end of March. We're at 73. So we need like 10 more. The weather this last couple of weeks hasn't helped. We don't send our staff out in the middle of, you know, in the negative 20, negative 50 degrees and want to expose them to that. So, but we'll catch up and get back on track with the risk assessments. We should be able to, we do at least 2 to 3 a week for the rest of the grant term. So our current expenditures, these are financials counted only until November as of right now. So they close out a month, and then we put in LOCS requests, which is asking for the money and submitting for the money. But with the shutdown, that has put us back a little bit. We're on track to do the benchmarks of completing expenditures, but the shutdown has helped. I don't know if them going back on shutdown starting the 15th, if that's going to put anything, any damper to us again. We were allowed to submit information to, there's like two main HUD people that stayed on staff, and we were able to communicate with them and send them information so that we can continue to submit our LOCS payments and things like that and our expenditures to them. Hopefully that will happen again if there is a shutdown. So this, wanted to show, this is Kenosha County. This is the projects for that were completed in this last grant from 2014 to 2017. I have a higher close up one, but I just got it today. So it was a little bit more zoomed in on the areas where we've completed work. Because we did, this is all of Kenosha County. It's kind of hard to see, but it's, yeah, the pointer doesn't work. So you can see all the way out in Randall and Twin Lakes. That's why this map is a little zoomed out here, because we do go out into the county. It's obviously not as predominant as in the city, but we just wanted to kind of show the areas where we have done work in this last grant period.
So the red are the completed ones?
Correct. Where we've actually done completed units, where we went into the home and counted them as a completed unit.
And the other symbols are ones that you're working on, or have?
I think there's only red ones. I think there's only red. Anything, I don't think there's
any other marks on there, are not you. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's far away. I mean, I could pass this around. This kind of shows a little bit of a closer up of the completed units.
Do you get calls to check much out in the county?
No. No, we get EBLs more out in the county than we do anything else, but we don't get a lot of a work out in the county.
What are EBLs?
The elevated blood level.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
So a poisoned child that has gone through the sanitarians and the nurses, then we'll go out there. Sometimes though, they don't qualify for the program, so They don't meet our income requirements or some sort, so then we can't do any work. So that might be why there's not as much work done out in the county. We have yet to have anything from Racine County come through as well at this point. We've had, obviously in the city, we have a lot of work, but now that we've done the count, we can go all the way out to Sturtevant and Mount Pleasant and Union Grove. We've yet to get anything out in those areas as well, so.
Racine City or Racine versus City of Kenosha, what's the breakdown? Do you get more in Racine than?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, their levels are lower. They considered a poison child at 10 micrograms per deciliter, and we are at a 15. So their levels are lower, so they'll go out more than we will.
Why is that? That we're 15 and they're 10?
That was in place before I came on board, so I'm not quite sure of the reasoning.
We do go out, I think, prior to 15.
So at 10 and above, we do a case managing, we open a chart, we do a home visit. And obviously, based on those findings, then we report back to the HUD program. And then based on the evaluations at the nurse's time, then that information will be shared with the team. And then they could potentially go and do risk assessment. And it all depends on follow-up labs from the child. Potentially it could be an error, a positive lead, and it could be we could also do a repeat and verify that information is valid. So it all depends on different things.
I was going to say, because we're reporting, mm-hmm. So not that we're getting many, but we're reporting.
And part of the home visit with the nurses is that we provide a lot of nutritional information for the parents. Mm-hmm. And sometimes just with that intervention alone, that satisfies sometimes or meets the needs of the family.
Hortensia, aren't we sending information out for 5 and above?
Yes, we do.
So,
in fact, because of the guidelines are that anything of 5 and above gets communicated to the families or reported to the parents. We do have, we document that information, and we also send a letter to the parents, and we do a lot of follow-up. We, depending on when the lab was done, we do a follow-up within 2 weeks, within a month, always communicating with the physicians as well, but definitely encourage the parents to do a follow-up lab. And all of that is documented, but definitely the one 10 and above, like Lindsay said, they do require a home visit.
So in Racine, they're putting orders out on the property at 10. So.
I think that, doesn't that come from like planning, housing?
Correct, it comes from the state
That's where that would start, not through the health department jurisdiction, but housing.
Yep.
So this EBO progress, this is kind of based on some projects and some EBOs that have come through our program from start to finish. We've identified that they have had a high level that's a 15 or above, as high as I think I saw a 29 or a 32, and then so and those were the high cases here within this last grant term or the grant term before that, and it's showing after completion of our program work they're getting down to as low as a 6. So they could be showing up at that 15 level or the 20 level, and then and that's still with monitoring in place. So I just went on the WER and tried to see what the most recent updated blood draw that happened, and kind of took an average of those high projects that we've seen come through our whole thing. So that's from coming through the sanitarians to the nursing, coming through our program, our contractors going out and completing work, and then so there is a time frame in between there. The average time frame to complete a project with an EBL referred to the program is between 6 to 10 months. That's from them notifying us trying to get out there to do a risk assessment to identify them, coming to the table with their percentage that they have to come with the 25% to continue with the project, them coming in with their income qualifications, things like that. The sanitarians do a risk assessment on their own, and then we might do our own risk assessment as well to identify different things, because we have different guidelines through HUD of what we can consider, what we can touch and things like that. But typically we work alongside each other and we identify the same things, and then we go into the home and remediate, there you go, remediate the hazards. And so that takes about 6 to 10 months if everybody's complying. So some of these are rental units, and then you've got to try to get within the homeowner, and then they've got to come in, and so then it does kind of extend the time frames that we're going in there. We do have the HEPA vacuums on hand that the sanitarians take out there, the nurses advocate for, so that they can clean up the property if they have to, use the HEPA vacuum to vacuum out windowsills if they've been doing some type of renovation that they can clean up properly. So we do try to advocate for doing things in proper manners if we see them renovating, things like that. But usually it takes about 6 to 10 months for us to complete a project from beginning to end.
Is there any thought of working with, like, the home visiting, especially prenatal? If you've got a pregnant mom, mm-hmm. and when the nurses are going out, they see the house is, or the residence is probably at risk.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I try to coordinate and give information, so I've tried to meet with the other teams and kind of let them know what we're doing and tell them what we're looking for, but I'm sure the nurses can kind of advocate for that. And then I try to give them like a sheet to, if they want that information, to so that we can reach out to them further and advocate for the program so that they can continue to move forward.
But isn't it a blood level that you have to get in the program?
No. Mm-mm. Any children, the program focuses through HUD on children under the age of 6. We do require that under the age of 6 that you're getting lead tested before we continue moving forward. But if you don't have a high level, it's not as, you could still go through the program. We just try to expedite the ones that have the higher level and then kind of go to the next one where there is children in the home, and then go, you know, to those homes that don't have any children, but could be a rental property that do rent out to low-income families with children or pregnant women, and then kind of go from there. So we have like who we try to focus on and then add them to it. Leanne's actually, we're doing something new where we're presenting information to the groups upstairs, so that I can kind of get out the information to everybody all at once so that they can know about the program, what to look for, things like that, and what we do, what we require, what our income guidelines are, what we need for them to be able to sign up for the program.
So. Because it'd be nice to eliminate the lead completely before the kid was even
correct
exposed to it.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So. So this was, it's kind of hard to see here. There wasn't an actual printout of the PowerPoint presentation, but if you want to see it further, you can either contact myself or Karen and she can send you the PowerPoint presentation. With that Healthy Homes money, we're also going into the homes and we're not only identifying lead hazards, but we're identifying healthy hazards, housing hazards. There is 29 points, and so I'll go, there's 29 points that we look for when we go into a home. We identify where they are, and then we come back and we grade them on a system based off the age of the home and what hazards really, how much of a hazard is that going to be for the lifetime of somebody living in that home. As you can see, damp and mold growth is one of them, excess cold. Domestic hygiene, things like that. Uncombusted fuel is a big one that we see a lot, which is people don't have the range hoods with any type of venting over their stove, which can cause a hazard. We can do up to $5,000 worth of work under the Healthy Homes pot of money per unit. So we can go into the unit and identify hazards and then see what comes up as high, and then we will go in and we will be able to help with some of those hazards. Like carbon monoxide, we put in a lot of carbon monoxide detectors and smoke detectors in homes. here's another personal hygiene, things like water supply, the mold and growth one before, like I said, we sometimes put gutters on homes so that there isn't a problem with foundation hazards, which lead to mold and moisture. We do, a big one is, where is it? Is it on here? Falling on stairs. We put up handrails that possibly are, that were taken down or fallen off the homes, things like that. So then we identify that, and we have that also, that pot of money that can go towards helping these homes in the community. This is some healthy homes data from this last grant. Structural collapse is a big one. Falls on stairs. Like I said, we put in the handrails for people, or we fix stairs. Carbon monoxide detector, excess cold would be windows that have holes in them that aren't identified as lead. So there could be a fixed window, but it's broken. And then obviously a fixed window is not creating a hazard because it's not going up and down, but it's got a big hole in it and the broken glass. And so we'll fix that under that because it's creating, you know, it's excess cold. Dampness and mold is a big one. Carbon monoxide. Falls on level surfaces, we might fix floors, things like that. We have to kind of look at everything when we find hazards in the home and be able to spend that money the best way possible because we have that limit of $5,000. But we do create a report and give that report with the risk assessment to the homeowners so they can see where we have identified hazards that we might not be able to fix at that time. So this is the grant overall accomplishments since for the last four previous grant cycles. So between Kenosha and Racine counties, we've addressed and gone into homes, and we've completed over 1,207 units within the last four grant cycles, which is about 10 years between the Racine and Kenosha County. And then this is where I wanted to kind of get into the befores and afters of the program work, and I wanted you to be able to see what we're doing in the community and what a difference it's making in the work that our contractors do. We currently have five contractors, hopefully one more coming on to help us with these projects, but these are mostly from this last grant cycle. So here's one before. There are a lot of peeling and chipping on the outside of the home, and then this is the before and after of it. So we're replacing, obviously, windows, we're replacing siding, things like that in on the home where we've identified some hazards. And then, like I said, you could see these more close up on the if you had the actual PowerPoint presentation, but you can see, obviously, there's a huge difference in what the home looks like. So we're not only, you know, we're helping with identifying and remediating the hazards in the community, but we're also helping the community by adding value to the homes and things like that. Here's another one. And as you can see, the railings, so there are metal railings here, so they probably weren't structurally sound. And so then here we have contractors that help fix the railings as well. So that would be considered healthy homes.
Get rid of the fridge.
Yeah, right? And as you can see, it's cleaned up. So it looks better all around. We don't have garbage complaints. But yeah, so you could see a big difference in these homes when we come through. Here's another one. Yeah, they get to choose their paint colors. We ask that it be in a certain type of paint, but yes, they can choose their colors and go like that. The contractors coordinate with all the homeowners prior to any work starting, and so we don't do fixed windows, but there's sometimes things that they, if it is a certain window that, you know, we're fixing on the sides, and they might do side work really depending on, but it just can't interfere with the grant work, but they try to help out the homeowner as best as they can, because the homeowners are, for the most part, contributing funding to the projects, so they're putting somewhat of their money to know that it's, you know, where they're investing in the project. So another one with the porch. So, and then this is gonna, that kind of shows the windows, what we look for, and that's a big hazard that we see often throughout the program. And then, as you can see, they wrap it and replace the windows. We do see a lot of porches that are deteriorated. A lot of children spend time on porches, and you get high levels from children spending time on porches and hanging out there. And then we kind of go in and we fix the windows there. We paint, we fix the siding on there. Here's a really good door. It shows a prime example of what we look for when we go into a home and we test. And then that's what it's gonna look like afterwards. This is like a stairwell. So either there was lead here or we put then stair treads on here. There's a falling on stairs. So another one of those healthy homes. And as you can see, the railing down towards the bottom is also looks newer, so they might have put that back up, or they might have put a railing back up to help with any fall hazards within the home. This is the foundation of the home, which we see quite a bit of peeling and chipping, and so then we go in and we paint that and fix that up. We paint basement windows, we replace basement windows, or we'll paint them and stabilize and paint them. This is like a porch floor, I guess you can say, an entryway floor, and then that's what it would look like afterwards after we come in through there. A close-up of a window, what we see. See a lot of kids' toys up on the windowsills like that, and so then you know, you want to try to advocate to have the toys off and wash the toys and clean the toys while you're there. And then that's what it's going to look like on the inside as well, of us replacing the windows and then fixing, stabilizing, and painting the sills as well. Here, obviously, the paint chips in there. And then that's what it would look like afterwards with a vinyl replacement window in the window. So we currently still work, partner with multiple different areas of the community. We do housing, WIC. The Racine Health Departments, the Landlord Associations, we do outreach through them. We have currently been still attending outreaches throughout the community, either programs like the National Night Out. I do attend, like I said, the Racine or the Kenosha Landlord Association meetings so that they can ask questions about the rental properties. We just went to one this weekend where we went to a remodeling home show in Racine to kind of just advocate for doing proper remodeling in lead-safe manners. But the word of mouth is still the best way that we get people back into the program, and returning landlords or things like that, or owners that have pass out our information to people they know.
Do you have any homeowners that reach out to you, or is it usually the other way around that you're reaching out to the homeowner?
It's them reaching out to us for the most part. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they've heard about the programs through either the health departments or weatherization or WIC or something like that, and then they reach out through the landlord association meetings, and then they reach out to us. So we do send out mail outs, but it's kind of hard to try to pinpoint if it's a rental property, and then you're trying to not try to keep the confidentiality thing. So if I might identify that there's through some of their information through nursing, that there's a high level there, all we can do is kind of send out information saying there's this program available. The owner of the property has to sign the property up. So the tenant might be interested, but it's the owner that has to sign the property up. It's not the tenant that can keep moving forward with the program. So sometimes you have one or both. You have an owner that's interested, and then the tenant's not, and they don't want to cooperate with you, or it's vice versa. And then so you have tenants that are willing to do it, but then you have owners that don't want people that are associated with the health department or things like that coming into their home. We might point out other things that they don't want pointed out, and then there's that lapse in being able to get us to sign them up for the program.
And 25% that they have to have up front to support them paying for the cost.
We cover owner-occupied EBL projects at 100%. It will cover the whole project up to $19,999.99. We'll cover that whole cost and then the 25% that they have to come into towards their lead costs at 100% as well for owner-occupied EBLs.
Also, when they're doing a property in a neighborhood, sometimes that's the word of mouth, mm-hmm. and then other neighbors will also.
Yeah, correct.
If you have flyers, get them to primary care offices.
Okay, yeah. I think we did around this time. This is like our slow time, obviously because of the weather. So our contractors can do interior work at this time, but they can't do any exterior work. So yeah, that's the time we reach out to, you know, property management groups. We deal with those a lot, property management groups, rental owners. But then we do reach out to the daycares, things like that as well in the area. We try to coordinate with weatherization in regards, because if you've already income qualified for weatherization or energy assistance, you're typically going to qualify then for our program as well.
Any other questions? Cindy?
Hey, a couple of things. Leanne mentioned about our improvement plan that's moving forward, and by summer or fall, we should be doing outreach with the new plan. Our health department five-year audit is coming up on February 26th. Everyone is invited, but at that meeting, we'll probably be doing celebration. We're near closing out on any minor issues that they recommended, that we add a few more sentences. It's like adding jewelry to the whole process. So by the 14th of February, we should have all of the recommendations completed, and then on the 26th will really be a celebration that we've completed and become recertified. The lab is purchasing a new blood alcohol analyzer, and that should arrive in March. Our KIC, the Kenosha Immunization Coalition Symposium, is scheduled April 24th, so I'm sure you'll be hearing more about that information that'll come out. The Narcan team trained 99 people in our community on how to administer Narcan, and law enforcement is doing their job saving lives. Every week we usually get notification of an individual that's been saved by Narcan. The MAT, our medication-assisted treatment program, they had 49 clients that received injections. I think, is that the last month, Leanne?
Yeah.
The last month. So they're also busy on saving lives with people in this program to recover from their addiction. And right now, open positions, we have a public health tech, a school nurse, and of course, with Gwen's retirement, a clinical services director that remains open.
Corporate Counsel?
Yeah, nothing really. The grant that I referenced last meeting was submitted about January 30th, so we're just waiting on that. But that's it.
Anyone have anything else?
I just want to say kudos to the county, everybody in the county staff, the government, or governor, instead of state emergency. During the coldest weather we've probably ever seen. It flips a page in their emergency action book, and the sheriff's department is in charge of the emergency government. They sent out all a list to all the agencies of where all the warming centers were. The hospitals kicked in and let them stay in the hospitals overnight. Nobody died in Kenosha County, and I don't even believe that there is any frostbite, serious frostbite complaints where you've had a half dozen die in Milwaukee and several dozen die in Chicago. So our emergency action plan worked, all the agencies working together worked. I went into work those days, phones were ringing off the hook for services. There's quite a few people in Kenosha County, at least a dozen I know, that live in their vehicles, and they're happy with that until the weather gets that dangerous. And then they need to someplace to go. We have the lady with Annie the pig, we have Tom with the two pit bulls. I mean, and we've got them all places to stay that they were happy with without them leaving their animals. And also, the county this year has spent more money giving money to Kenosha Human Development Services for the voucher program. And a lot of people that we've had that walked in, we've called the crisis line, and they've came and picked them up and got them into a hotel. And just about everybody that we've gotten in the last month on the single person side of the program has either came from the crisis program or from the community care center. and they've got stabilized there, and they've came to us. We have about six in the last month that came from there. So, and there's money in the budget this year to expand the care center. So good work by the county and by all the hospitals. We were getting emails from the hospitals every day of how many stayed there, and it wasn't a whole lot that really stayed in the hospital lobbies. It was very few. So our action plan works.
Thanks, Mark. Very good. Anything else? So, do we have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.